even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and bouncy boy, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
We're sticking with bouncy boy.
With bouncy boy because you tried to claim a bounce pass on
I stand by that. No, that's right. That was any one-touch pass. That counts. That counts as a bounce pass, honest.
Let's come back to that in a little bit.
Okay.
There's quite a bit going on. We've got quite a lot to talk about. Firstly, congratulations to Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, who got married this weekend. Looked like a very happy ceremony, nice pictures. He looked very, very suave, I thought. Shaved his beard off.
Well, if it wasn't a happy wedding, something would be going wrong, Windy. So, yeah.
That's true. Fair enough. He looks like a different man, clean-shaven.
Mm.
He looks so different.
A lot younger.
Yeah, he does.
He looks like a player that I'd be all right with us signing, a bit of a prospect.
Yeah.
Instead of this grizzled old guy that's played 10,000 minutes in one season.
Yeah, hopefully he gets a bit of resting on his honeymoon.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, the Euros made him seem like the kind of player you'd be interested in signing as well, right? I think he had the highest number of assists or second highest number of assists in the tournament, which was surprisingly impressive, I think.
Let's sell him then. While his stock is high, let's sell.
You're turning into Nathan. One other bit of admin. I am looking for an accountant, and I'd like to work with a Spurs fan, ideally, give the Spurs fan some business. So it's literally just for self-assessments, but it'll be an ongoing thing. So if anyone wants some accountancy business, then hit me up. You can write to me at podcast@theextrainge.co.uk. On Patreon this week, we've had another episode of Straight Off the Training Ground. That's my second podcast I did with Chris Summersell, who is a coach and an analyst. And he's brilliant. He's really brilliant. He's got great coaching knowledge and talks about his own team and some of the coaching routines that he uses. And also the realities of what it's like to work in football. It's been lovely getting to know Chris, and we really appreciate the work that he does. And Nathan, you've got a second video coming on Thursday. You'd released the first Nuno video, and then this one is about his time at Porto, right?
Yeah, so I thought there's a chance that Porto and Wolves would be together video, but I think I've gathered all of my clips, I think, for the Porto video, and that's going to be a full-length one of its own merit. I don't want to say too much already, but like the impression that had been spoken about Nuno, and what I sort of started to get the impression of when I was first watching the Porto games, is there was quite significant differences between Porto and Valencia and Wolves, but now I'm seeing sort of the same system applied to different circumstances.
Okay.
So that's what I think the focus of the video is going to be on. And I'm hoping to get a few clips from the Orient friendly as well for continuity purposes. I don't know what I'm going with that sentence.
Okay, let's do Orient. Let's do Orient. So you've already mentioned bounce pass, and now you've mentioned the sort of tactical side of things. I'm intrigued on your view. So Nuno Espirito Santo was really keen prior to the game to sort of separate out the work that had been going on the training field from what we would see in the Orient match. He was keen to say, look, what we've been doing is fitness work. It's preparation. It's like the underlying stuff. We haven't started the tactical stuff yet. So there was me sort of hoping to see a bit of a blueprint of Nuno's Spurs. And then I felt like he just whitewashed that and said, yeah, don't expect that. And so I watched it with a sort of open mind, thinking this is just a tactical run out. This is just, not tactical run out, a fitness run out. And nothing more than that. It's a really hot day. We're playing a bunch of 18-year-olds. Like, don't expect anything. Don't expect to take anything from it. Don't expect to make any takes. Mm. But you're saying, Nathan, you've seen a few things already.
Yeah, he's lying. He's lying directly out of those lips. He's talking nonsense, mate. He's throwing you off. He's giving you a mysterious scent. So, okay, obviously, like, the intricate levels of the football that he wants to play are just not there at all. But it is very much like a rough impression, and the sort of fundamental stylisms are sort of coming to shape there, which is like the physical distance between the build-up play and the sort of attacking overload on the defensive line, the short pass combination between defenders, and then the long pass over the top to attack, the bounce pass via Lucas that I insist is definitely okay. Another name for a bounce pass is a wall pass, right? You have to imagine that Lucas is a wall, and your was it Winks pass?
Yep.
Winks is playing the ball to Scarlett via a brick wall in the middle of the pitch. Lucas is the wall. So, okay, you can say, well, I think a bounce pass is more of a sort of a short combination thing in a smaller amount of space. Fine. If you want to say it's not that, but it's the same principle, it's the same idea. It's fire it into this area and then quickly. It's the two-way thing, right? It's I'm really stealing more and more of my video's content here, but it's like you're pushing all of your attacking players, right, your forwards and your attacking midfielders into a close area together in terms of like vertical positioning on the pitch, and then one of them's running towards the ball, which is Lucas, and one of them's running away from the ball, and then they're going to combine. Because as a defender, where do you go, right? That's the principle there. So maybe it's not a bounce pass, but it's the move was very Nuno. So when he says, oh, we've just been doing fitness, he's talking nonsense, mate.
So this is really interesting, because what you've revealed to me now is that I had totally misinterpreted what you meant previously by bounce pass.
Okay.
So let me deal with that first. So what I had thought you'd meant by bounce pass is a pass where essentially it's a 1-2 where no one moves. It's essentially a quick 1-2, but the two players making the passes are static throughout. And the idea is that you change the speed of the ball, or you change the players around them. You buy time for your players or the opposition players to move before you play the follow-up pass. So that's really interesting. 1-2 touch passing was a massive, massive facet of early Pochettino Spurs. Like, it was sure. Like one of the primary tactics. It's one of the reasons why Eric Lamela was so seen as so vital at first, because he was really good at playing like 1-2 touch passes before he used to like dribble with one foot all the time. He was really good at playing incisive through balls with 1-2 touches.
Well, this is the thing. Like, that's Lucas's best pass we've seen since the North London Derby, like 2 years ago, right? It's when you take away the decision making away from Lucas and you say, get in this position and play the first time pass. Don't consider the other options. Don't control the ball. Look down and then think about what you want to do, right? It's go here, do this. And that's going to maximise Lucas for a few weeks, and then he'll go back to his old habits, and the window will have shut, and we'll have gone, oh, I thought Lucas was going to have a really good season. Well, maybe we should have sold him. So I still want us to sell Lucas, obviously. But we do have an issue with like width on the right. What we saw a little of in that game, more than a little of, is the Tomiyasu role, is the defensive right back and the attacking left back, I think, which means that we need our winger to provide the width on the right hand side. Obviously, when he played that pass, he wasn't in that moment, and he came deep and he came narrow quite a lot. But we're pretty limited on our players who can do the width outright. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dele's a right footer, not going to play wide out there. Lo Celso is happy to receive, in that position, but then wants to move narrow, move inside, move deep, and not carry the ball down the wing. Bergwijn can play that role. It's not the best utilisation of him, I don't think. And then Lucas, we sort of saw in that role, again, is moving away from that position quite a bit. So we don't really have a natural right width if we're going to play with a defensive right back, so it's a curious one.
Well, I think Son can play that role, but it's whether you want to move him away from the left where he's so effective.
Yeah, he's just better on the left. And that's the thing with him being like so two-footed. It's like, okay, I'm going to do my version of Bardi's Italy. In mixed martial arts, right, in kickboxing, in boxing, you've got fighters who fight sort of in one stance, an orthodox or a southpaw, and you've got fighters who can fight in two stances. They can mix up. They can go left-hand lead, right-hand lead. And within that, you also have a division of like, they fight the same, they fight identical in the two positions, or they have two completely different styles when they have one foot forward, the other foot forward, right? And I think Son is very much that. Like, he's very, very two-footed, but he has very specific things, right? So his right foot is for curlers, his left foot is for lasering with the inside of his foot, yeah? He can dribble with his right, but with his hips tilted towards the left. Does that make sense? So although he's two-footed, he's very, very one-sided. He still scored goals from the right. He can still do things from the right, but it's very clear that he feels he's best from the left, and he's trained himself to play off the left, and that's sort of where he wants to be.
Yeah, I don't think you want to move Son, to be honest. And the other notable thing was the formation. It was a 4-3-3 to my eyes. It was a very obvious 4-3-3 because of the way Dele was positioned. So you had Winks in the first half, you had Winks in the middle at the base, then you had Niall John to his right and Dele to his left. And at times, Dele was dropping deep and collecting the ball from the centre-backs. You know, he was really deep, really, really deep. He did fine. I don't think he was particularly impressive. It's the first game of pre-season. It's a hot day, etc., etc. But I don't want to see Dele playing that role, personally. I want to see him, if he's going to be in a 4-3-3, I want to see him as one of the front three, not one of the midfield three. And I think that was when he started to decline the Pochettino, when he moved back into the midfield. So that was a concern, to be honest, for me, but it could just be due to the available players, frankly, at this point.
Yeah, I do think that it's fair to have that concern, because I do think that Dele is at his best the closer he is to goal. I suspect that he's probably being tried out in a central midfield role to see if that works for him, see if that's right for him under Nuno and that kind of thing. Even though he came deep a lot, playing as a number 8 in a Nuno 4-3-3 is still quite an attacking role, because there's not that much midfielding going on with Nuno, right? So when you're playing Dele's role, especially the left-sided central midfield role, because the right back is defensive, so the build-up tends to lean towards the right with the left fullback high, and then the left central midfielder is the one who has to recognise the time to come in and fill that gap, come in and recognise. And I think that when Dele went off later in the game, we lost the understanding from younger players of when to come and fill that space and make that connection, and so the play slowed down a lot, and we, the sort of second half barely happened at all. But when you're playing that role, when Dele's playing that role, it's like he's either like a number 6 or a number 10, right? You're constantly moving between two sort of opposite extremes of midfield. You're either participating in deep build-up, or you're like looking for either a running behind or to play the running behind. Although I think playing a central midfield role has been a problem for Dele, I think this one is possible for him. And I do think that we want to continue to experiment him playing that role. What you need is other players who are also good at recognising when to fill that space, and Dele gets his turn getting to be a more attacking player. But I thought he had really good recognition of helping the play from that role.
He played more long passes than I think I've ever seen Dele play in a match before. Mm. Did you notice that? Which is another argument in favour of Nuno's lying. This was a tactical thing as well.
Yeah.
Niall John was really impressive. I think it's worth noting that. I mean, I've seen a bit of John before, and he's a player I was pretty excited about, to be honest. He's a dynamic number 8 who has played as a 10 and a 6. He's literally able to play any role in midfield. But the key for me with John is that he's quite explosive one against one. He can beat a man, but also his short passing game is really, really good as well. And he had that nice bit of play where he got on the end of a long pass, kind of lobbed it over a defender, and then had an attempt at goal, which was eye-catching. But it was always other stuff that was which was notable to me as well. It's like the when, like coming short to link play and being available to receive from Winks. Really good stuff. Really impressive.
I think he was him and Scarlett were probably the most interesting things to come out of the game. It was good to see. It was good to see Scarlett play. I completely agree with Nathan. I think Dele's going to have to learn to play that role. I think that's where his future lies for us at the moment, in that kind of freer of the freer third person in our midfield. But yeah, it was nice to see a young player step up and do something. And I'm not sure we can take a great deal from the game, because it wasn't the greatest match of football, and it was a bit of a come down after the Euros to watch Tottenham plod through a match. But yeah, now John got me excited.
He's really good. We've got another game on Wednesday against Colchester, when I would expect to see a few more youngsters. I mean, maybe they'll do a reverse of this match in terms of who was on the bench might start. But I think we might see some different players also. I think Markande, who scored a hat-trick for the 23s against Ramsgate, we might see him play against Colchester, which would be cool.
Plus, it's a revenge match as well, isn't it? Got to get our revenge for them booting us out of the cup.
Absolutely. What would also be really good is if we could see Skip and Sessegnon play, and maybe Ndombele too, because they were all absent, presumably for fitness reasons, either they weren't ready or carrying knocks or something. So yeah, that would be cool.
It was fun to see Carter Vickers play as well. He's been at Tottenham for as long as I can remember. It seems like he's been there all my life. But it was fun to see him play, and he's not bad. He's not bad. He's all right.
He's all right, isn't he? He could play for a lower Premier League club, and that would not be a problem, I think.
I reckon he could play in front of Dyer.
You'd rather him than Dyer?
Yeah, I think so.
Even after Dyer stepping in to protect Callum Cisse?
I don't need a centre back who's very good at propaganda and sticking up for players. I need a centre back that can clear the ball and not get lost with what's happening behind him. And I think Carter Vickers has a bit more spatial awareness than Eric Dyer. Plus, I always keep saying the same thing. There's nothing else to learn. Dyer's not going to get any better. This is it now. He's only going to get worse from now on. Where perhaps we can eke out a couple more percentage in Carter Vickers. We won't, because he's not very good either. But I'm so tired of Eric Dyer. It was nice to have 6 weeks away from him.
Carter Vickers is 23 now. Can you believe that?
I wonder if anyone has played more pre-season minutes for us than Carter Vickers. He's like a pre-season
perennial.
Legend. He needs a pre-season testimonial pretty soon, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like the pre-season fodder.
Him and Georgiou just made careers out of squad filling for us. And who was the other one? The one Alex from Bristol loved. Anton Walks as well. Yeah. God, whatever happened to Anton Walks?
We had a question from Harry Sherlock, who says, where do you guys think Scarlett is in his development? Can we realistically expect him to get minutes this season, or would a loan be best? He took his goal really well, I thought. Sharp left foot finish. He's a right footed player, but that was a really handy finish. I mean, I think his where he is at the moment is a very raw 17-year-old who is learning his trade still. And I personally would expect him to play under-23 football primarily, but I absolutely have no issue with him playing some conference minutes. Like, that seems logical to me, to stick him up front in the Europa Conference League.
I have a concern about Scarlett. Perhaps you can help me with this. In the same kind of way, when I saw Harry Kane play at the age of 17, 18, that he doesn't seem to have one outstanding feature which you could kind of rely on as a youth player. Like, you can't look at him and think, oh my god, he's going to be a big guy and he's going to win duels, or he's really fast, or he's just got an explosive shot. I'm a bit worried that in the same kind of way Troy Parrott, he's just a bit kind of a rhombus. Like, there's no sharp points to him. Is this something that he's going to develop, or it's just because we're looking at him versus like full grown men that he doesn't seem to have an outstanding feature?
So I think Parrott is definitely like what you said about Kane. Like, he is an all-rounder. Parrott is kind of pretty good at everything, but not outstanding at anything. But I still do think Parrott's going to be really good, by the way. But Scarlett, I think, the thing that stands out for me with Scarlett is two things. Firstly, timing of the run on the shoulder. Really, really impressive for one so young to be able to time a run as consistently well as him. And secondly, finishing. both feet and head. Really, really good finisher. And I think, to be honest, that will serve him well. At whatever level he ends up at, whether it's Spurs or below, he will score goals. He's a natural goal scorer. He has been at every single level he's played at.
I feel like the Parrot hype has died down and everyone's excited for Scarlett now. But I'm still very much more excited for Parrot than I am for Scarlett. And I think that Parrot is still ahead of him in the pecking order, and Parrot is who we should be prioritising in the short term, with Scarlett looking for a loan in the near future, I think. But there you go.
Yeah, I'm equally excited about both of them, to be honest. I think they're both really, really good players. Really good players. And it seemed like, although last year wasn't the best for Parrot in terms of what he achieved on the pitch, sure, I think it was a huge growth year for what he achieved off the pitch. From the interviews he gave at the end of the season, he seemed to have learnt a lot about what it takes to be a footballer, and I think that's what he needed more than anything. My reading between the lines is that they intend to play Scarlett this year as a backup, or, you know, as a sub to give him minutes, whereas Parrot will be on loan again. But if that were reversed, I would have absolutely no issue with that at all. I'm fine either way. Speaking of young players, Gregory Krieg says, question on Skip. What is his best position going forward? Is he a deep-lying shield for the back four, a slightly more advanced possession recycler type, or, and I'm straining here, someone we can think can be a bit of a creator, a kind of cut-rate Eriksen replacement? And that ties in nicely to Nathan's comments about the midfield and kind of different roles in Nuno's midfield. Bardi, where do you see Skip ending up?
I mean, I didn't watch as much of him at Norwich as you guys did, but I don't think he's going to be a creator in an Eriksen mode. I think he's going to be, what, someone that recycles possession, I think? I think he won't win the ball, but he'll be the kind of second of the three to kind of help tick things over and progress the ball. That's what I kind of see him playing, but I'm happy to take your guys' steer on it.
I can definitely see him as the one kicking the ball against the wall, Nathan.
Okay, yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I think his future is as a number six. As a, he's very Højbjerg like we talked about before with Højbjerg's sort of performances for Denmark. Should we be considering him as a number eight? It's the same thing for Skip. He's played a lot of minutes as a number eight, and that's good for him developmentally. But now, you know, he has to sort of make way from that role for sort of more expressive, creative players, more skillful players, and refine his game around being sort of safe and secure, defensive, and be a number six and play that role for us. I think that's really good for him to be Højbjerg's backup.
So I got a question for you guys. So at the moment we're looking at Højbjerg, Skip, Ndombele, and Ali as our kind of four, if we're going to play a 4-3-3. Of those four, which is the best three combination to play?
Or are you including Lo Celso too?
Ah, shit, I forgot about Lo Celso. Okay, we got Lo Celso. Okay, fair enough. So it improves our options even more. Do we have a midfield trio that can play from those five, or do we have to buy somebody?
It's a good question. I mean, I've said it for a year now. I still really want to see Højbjerg, Ndombele, and Lo Celso as a midfield three. And I think they can work in the Nuno midfield. I don't see a reason why they can't work. So you'd have Ndombele on the left of the three, Lo Celso on the right of the three, Højbjerg at the base. And like, I'm happy to run with that and just let it happen and give it a go. But equally, I'm up for Skip at the base and Højbjerg as one of the two more free players in a game where we need a slightly more defensive approach. I think that can work too. And if you add in Lo Celso there as a third, that's a grafting midfield, isn't it? Skip, Højbjerg and Lo Celso. You can imagine them covering a lot of ground, making us very difficult to play against. What do you think, Nathan?
No, I think Højbjerg has to remain in a sitting role pretty much under almost all circumstances for us. I mean, there's a few combinations there, but it looks like from the rumours that we are looking at midfielders that we're not happy with the current midfield makeup. That I don't know. It's a weird one. I think there's the talent there. Maybe there's concerns about how things have gone so far, but I would. I don't know what Nuno might have sort of discussed with him, but I would like to run our existing talent under our new coach before we panic too much about the makeup. Yeah, I think Højbjerg and Ndombele and Lo Celso is a really good midfield, and especially especially for Nuno and the way that he wants his eight to take up very, very attacking roles most of the time. I think that's a really good fit. So I think that we should run with what we got. But there you go.
The counterpoint to that is what we saw at Wolves, which I know is a different system, but Neves and Jean Moutinho played very sort of conservative roles. you know, and if you're going with that sort of shape in midfield, then it's Skip and Yobia. Yeah.
Well, this is the thing, is that the other bit of news recently is that we're looking for forwards to play alongside Harry Kane. We're looking at the likes of Danny Ings and the Fiorentina forward, whose name I've forgotten, Vlahovic. So players who are fast in behind runners, Dane Scarlett type players, right? To do Kane's running for him, both like in possession, so that he's making those darts in behind, and out of possession, doing Harry Kane's defensive work for him, which kind of throws off the 4-3-3 that we've seen so far, that I was sort of speculative towards before we saw it, that he's sort of been consistent throughout his career, and leaves us with either 4-4-2, a diamond, or a 3-5-2, all of which we have seen before for Nuno at various teams. So maybe that is what he's saying when he's like, oh, don't read too much into what you saw in this game tactically, because as soon as we get a new striker in, I'll be playing 4-4-2 or whatever. So maybe all of this discussion around Højbjerg and Dombele and Lo Celso is irrelevant, and the reason we want change in our midfield is because we want to play more of a midfield too. But the argument that I've already recorded some of the video, right? I did a session with my tactics boards, and I'm really eating into that content, where I explain that basically, no matter what the sort of starting formation on paper, it always moves into the same shape. It always becomes a six joining the defence, a sort of a 3+1, and then everyone else just pushing way up and overloading the defensive line. So formation's like quite irrelevant with Nuno. I guess it's more important defensively than offensively, but it's going to determine our personnel.
So I had the conspiracy theory with the Ings link and the sort of rumours that we're looking for a second striker. My conspiracy theory was that essentially, of course we'd say that because we want to get another striker fairly cheaply before we sell Kane and the teams know we've got 150 million in the bank.
But then why is Ings your Harry Kane replacement?
Well, maybe that's the level they'll be shopping at. I mean, I know it's not exactly exciting, is it? But on the other hand, he guarantees goals. I mean, he does guarantee goals.
He's not bad. He's not the worst striker.
Is he 28 or 29? Long history of injuries, right?
He's 28 until he's 29.
Thanks. But again, like the profile of forward we're looking at are these the running behind types, which makes sense to play with Harry Kane. The idea is that we're going to sell him and just get, you know, a good striker who does one basic thing well, a poacher, an in-behind poacher. It's quite a drastic change in style. And the idea is that you would then reinvest that money in the midfield and defence. I don't know. And also, we should have been in for André Silva, who blossomed under Nuno at Porto and has now gone to Leipzig. We should have been in for him earlier, but whatever.
I'm still not convinced by André Silva. It's just I'm not sold on him. But our friends at The Athletic listed André Silva, Zapata at Atalanta, and Vlahovic as logical transfers for Tottenham to replace Harry Kane. So,
see, Nathan, I'm not convinced that Ings is a running behind striker anymore. Owing to injuries and also the fact that he's becoming much more of a link player as he's got older. Like, he comes short for Southampton, certainly he comes short for the ball a lot more. Only that is partly their system. Him and Adams will regularly drop into midfield and pick up the ball with the wingers then running in behind. But like, he's not that player he once was at Burnley. He doesn't just make constant runs in behind. He's much more of a intelligent sort of 9.5, I would say, these days. And I just don't think you buy... If you're looking for someone to take some of the pressure off Kane's legs, you don't buy another player with a history of chronic injuries. Yes. He's 29. It's bad news.
Well, look, if we're selling Harry Kane, we should buy odds on Edward. And that's all I have to say.
Absolutely. Completely correct. This was an interesting one. Dan Alvarez says, aside from Kane, who do you feel will be the next Spurs player to get England cap? Will it be one of the vets, Delhi, Winks, Dyer, one of the kids, Skip, Sessegnon, Tanganga, or someone who isn't in the side yet, i.e. a future signing? A couple of years ago, it felt like we were integral to the England setup. Nowadays, it feels like we're a waning influence, which is a bummer.
Yeah, I don't think that Skip, Sessegnon, or Tanganga are, like, they need to have full, strong seasons for Spurs, which they're a season off from, at least, each, right? They're all deputies to their role. So they need to claim that position, then maintain that position for a while, and then get called into the England squad. So I think they're all off for quite a while. Winks and Dyer, I don't see. I suppose Dyer could, because he's just sort of versatile. Winks, I don't see making the England team again. Not while he's at Spurs anyway. So I think that our best bet is Dele, because if Dele comes back into the Spurs team, plays really well for 10 games, he's in with the call again. Yeah. And I think that is very much in the cards. And people don't feel that way right now. People were really critical of his performance in the friendly, and I don't understand that at all, because, again, he was the one who was smart at recognising when to fill the space and stuff like that. But whatever, I think there are pretty strong agendas against Dele, so I'll just let that go. But I think that, I think if you look, and I made this point before, but if you look at Luke Shaw, look at where he was in his career after he had to deal with Mourinho, and now he's one of the best left backs in the world. God, is he? He might be contention for best left back in the world right this moment.
It's close.
Had a brilliant tournament for England, scored in the final.
The trajectory of the careers of Luke Shaw and Dele are so similar, it's insane. Broke through very young for a smaller team, got a transfer to a bigger team, got bullied by Jose Mourinho, had a season or two of falling off a cliff as a result. And then in Luke Shaw's case, has been utterly resurgent. We just have to hope that Dele mirrors that. I think they might be the same age too, very close in age.
Dele was in a bit of a funk before Jose.
He hadn't been
performing at the top level, and he did have a little bit of a resurgence under Mourinho before it completely fell away again.
Yeah, that is true. That's completely true. But I agree with Nathan. I think Dele is most likely to be next. I think Winks is a lot more likely than Dyer. I mean, some of the ITK suggested that Nuno wants to give Winks a chance and thinks that there's something there, which I'm not keen on. But then it depends on what kind of midfield shape he's playing, I think, because Winks can do certain things pretty well and others less well. So, yeah.
You wrote a rundown of our homegrown situation recently. Do we need to buy English players?
Not really. No, we don't need to worry too much about it. The only thing is we need to make sure we do actually clear players out, because we are restricted at the moment with what sort of non-English players, non-homegrown players we can buy by the fact that our squad is absolutely chock full of deadwood. It's really crucial that we start. And this is the thing that's worrying me a little bit, you know. We're a long way into the summer and we've sold Juan Foyt and we've released a few players and that's it. And we know that, you know, Aurier and Alderweireld want to leave and hopefully they'll get their moves and that clears up a couple of spaces. But there's a lot of players that there've barely been any rumours about. We need to start shifting players before we can, you know, have some exciting new things to play with.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Jeff Fieldsend says, Windy's comments about penalty shootouts reducing a team game to one of individual combat made me wonder whether a better solution, which would to some extent overcome this, would be for 10 penalties to be taken by each team rather than 5. I would suggest 11, so the whole team would take one, but given the match will have already lasted 120 minutes, there is a danger of forcing an injured player to take one. I think we need to acknowledge that for all their deficiencies and unfairness, the drama and simplicity of penalties has heightened the appeal of the game to a wider layer of the public. Technocratic solutions, for example, those involving expected goals, corners and yellow cards would, I think, be a turn-off for this wider layer of viewers and fans. Yeah, what do you think, Bardi? 10 penalties rather than 5?
No, we can't sit there for 10 penalties. Just pick five, your 5 best versus the other 5 best and get it done with. We've already sat through an hour, 120 minutes of football. There's no need to make it go any longer.
What if we ditched extra time for more penalties?
No, I think extra time is good. There's been some pretty decent extra time in the Euros. Going straight to penalties does offer for me, it does switch straight to the kind of lottery thing immediately. Let's have another half an hour and see what can happen. You know, England scored against Denmark in extra time. There was the Spain-Croatia game, which extra time was pretty good. The Italy-Austria extra time was pretty good. I think we saw enough in the extra times at this tournament to kind of justify keeping going with it.
I feel like extra time only tends to settle a game where, like, one side's been obviously better and just not quite got the ball over the line, and then the extra 30 minutes gives them a chance to create more chances and build that head of steam into a goal. It's not like one where if a match has been genuinely even, they carry on really going hell for leather at each other for 30 minutes. That tends not to happen. They tend to just sort of let the extra time play out, if anything, and keep things relatively safe. So I'm in favour. I like golden goal for that reason.
Oh, no. I hate golden goal. I got crushed by the golden goal in 2000. I never want to see it again.
Nathan, what do you think of the 10 penalties suggestion?
I want any excuse to get rid of extra time. I think it's terrible. I hate it.
Do you hate it more than penalties?
Yeah. At least penalties is entertaining, conclusive, not doing.
It's only entertaining when it's not your team in it.
No, okay, fine. But extra time just does so much more damage than it does good. Like it wears, players are dropping with cramp all over the shot.
Yeah.
And like you get very little in return, like in terms of goals, I think. There were a whole bunch of like leaked FIFA plans for the complete reinvention of football.
Really?
You're not online sufficiently anymore. You don't see these things. Let me find them real quick. 30-minute halves with a stop clock.
Okay.
So the thinking behind this, I think, is really smart. Essentially, we play this 90-plus-minute game in which the ball is actually in play for roughly 60 minutes, right? Where the referee is meant to, like, guess how long the ball has been out of play and then make that up. But if that was the case, he'd be adding, like, 15 to 20 minutes on the end of each half, right? That's the reality. Instead, he adds 4 and then blows his whistle at 3 minutes 30. So 30 minutes, real, like, actual 30 minutes, pure 30 minutes. The clock is stopped when the ball is out of play. No more time wasting. Personally, I think that there are pro time wasting arguments to be had. But the idea is that you then get a regimented exact amount of time that every game is. Unlimited subs is kind of crazy to me. But again, this is meant to go in hand, right? So you're no longer using subs for the purpose of time wasting. All subs are for their own merit, for their own benefit. I think there are, again, a lot of sort of pro fatigue reasons. I would recommend saying, like, keeping your 3, we'll call them now senior subs, and then having bonus under 21 or under 23 homegrown subs as a way of persuading those minutes onto Skip, onto Sessegnon, onto Divine or whatever. They are looking at throw-ins played with your feet, which, just as a sentence on its own, is an absolute recipe for complete disaster, because every throw-in becomes a free kick and about throwing men up in the box. But if you have to keep the ball on the ground, or it's a foul, if you have to go backwards, if you want to explore options like that, I think there is something there. Throw-ins are such a miss. We talked about this before recently, about how throw-ins are like a disadvantage, essentially, for the team who are having them. I think instead, look at what Liverpool are doing. Teams could simply just be smarter with what they do with throw-ins. And you can see one of the big changes is that Liverpool now just take their throw-ins instantly. They're quick throws. Mm-hmm. They're not waiting for teams to settle into a defensive shape where they can make use of their numerical advantage over you. Get the ball, lob it in behind first time. That's how you take a throw-in. But nonetheless, they do feel kind of out of place within football. They are a bit weird. And then a 5-minute suspension for a yellow card, which again is very dangerous, because I think that you just get teams parking the bus for 5 minutes. Unless they're chasing a draw or a win. FIFA want to completely change the game.
I am quite interested in the stopwatch one, because when Jose Mourinho beat beat us at Wembley that season when we lost 1-0 and De Gea had an almighty match. I think he was incredible at wasting time. And I think we lost maybe 20 minutes of the 90 minutes just by De Gea taking goal kicks. So I am interested in that. But I do think the issue with football is they try to make the game translatable across all levels. And I'm not sure whether some chap down the park would be able to keep control of a match. All Bob the referee would need to do is forget to hit stop at one point and the game would descend into chaos. So I'm not sure how practical that is to make it something that can be implemented everywhere.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, Bardi, actually, whether it's repeatable without sort of proper match officials. The subs idea, Nathan, the problem with having an unlimited number of under 18 or under 21 subs is that you'll find the big clubs just mop up all the best under 21 talent more than they already do, which is already an issue. And I don't like that concept, really. But I'm not necessarily against unlimited subs. I think the five subs rule has worked fine, so I'd have no problem with unlimited. I guess again, it means that those with a larger budget have another advantage because they can always bring on a fresh team, which is equally talented to their first 11.
Yeah, I have enjoyed the five subs over the summer, and it's been interesting to see how managers have used those subs to change the flow of a game. Yeah. But then you do see a match, for example, where England play against Denmark, and when Denmark need to turn to their bench, they got nothing there. Whereas England can just pull out Grealish or Sancho or whoever. So yeah, it does end up just supporting and helping the bigger team. So maybe we stick to three. I mean, when you're making six substitutes like we saw in some games, then it was getting a bit unruly, a bit all over the top. But I do agree with you that if it was under 21 players or under 23 players, you would get Manchester City, Chelsea and the rest of them just harvesting youth players, not sending them out on loan, which doesn't benefit lower leagues, doesn't benefit player development, just for them to be used as substitutes.
We have been linked mid-recording with Atalanta's Christian Romero.
That's such a good link.
Yeah.
Yeah,
more.
He's a good defender. He reminds me a bit of like a Montero from back in the day. He's a strong defender. He doesn't take any prisoners.
Yeah.
He's very tall. He's very elegant. He's got that Argentinian kind of oomph about him, but not in that kind of oafish Sesame Street character that Fazio has. I like the cut of his jib. I think he'd be an excellent signing. And I think he'd be an excellent defender. And I'm very excited. I saw that just pop up now. I'd be very excited about making that signing.
What sort of money are we talking?
I mean, Atalanta like to sell for big. So I don't know, I guess 25, 30 million, which I think is probably a bargain.
Yeah. So Atalanta plays a really difficult. So he plays as a really aggressive front foot. He's a dog, Windy. He's very much a dog, and has sort of corresponding defensive numbers with that. But the thing with players from that team is that like they're kind of hard to judge sort of apart from the way that team play, especially in terms of like aggressive defending, because like that's way up there. But I mean, you know, I definitely think it's an exciting link. I just think that, like, it's, for me, it's going to require some sort of thorough research. But the Castagne signing went well for Leicester, so...
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, an interesting one.
Yeah, there is that risk about Atalanta. Nathan's right, that they're so kind of wedded to their manager's beliefs and manager's system that they can struggle to adapt when they move to other clubs. But Castagne does stand out. Kessie's another one that looked amazing at Atalanta. Then he went to Milan and it's taken him a while to settle. So there are individuals like that. I think he does have a nice partnership. Romero, he kind of dovetails well with Toloi, who's a very gifted footballer. We saw him at the Euros be able to play at centre-back and at right-back. He's very good on the ball. So I would have confidence in this signing. And he's not Italian, but even though he's coming from a Serie A team, I would have confidence in the signing. He's a huge step up from Dier and the rest of them.
23.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Nathan, as soon as you mentioned the name, I looked him up on FBref to sort of check out the numbers. Ooh. and the numbers absolutely scream dog at me. I mean, in fact, I should say they absolutely bark dog at me. 99th percentile for pressures and interceptions, 98th percentile for tackles, 91st percentile for aerials won. I mean, this is an aggressive front foot defender who is making lots of defensive interactions.
What about his in possession stats? Is he a progressor?
Not a progressor. So progressive passes are sort of mid-range percentile, but his pass completion is fairly high. He has a fairly high number of touches in the penalty area. So perhaps that explained that kind of could describe set piece target. That he might be a set piece target. Yeah. He gets a lot of assists for a centre back. That again, maybe he's the first port of call for a defensive for an attacking corner routine. A relatively high number of non-penalty goals also, and shot creating action. So yeah, this looks good in both boxes, basically, I would say. Yeah. Okay.
That's cheered you up, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, all of the defensive links have been pretty good so far, I would
almost
say.
All of the links have been good, man. Or Ings, maybe. I have some doubts on injury history and age and your theory that he's a Harry Kane replacement. But generally, the names that are coming up, and I made this point before, but the names that have been coming up ever since Perattici's been in charge of transfers has been... it's impressive, the right words. Not impressive until the signings are actually made, I guess, but promising. Exciting.
Yes. The only thing that is clearly absent in all of this is an attacking right back. I think we need an attacking right back still. I mean, obviously it depends on what system we're going to play. And it does seem that he wants to play Tomiyasu as the right back, but it means you've got Matt Doherty as your attacking right back option, and I don't feel quite satisfied with that. Maybe it'll work out fine. But yeah, that's the only thing I think is missing. But yeah, I mean, absolutely. Let's sign some good defenders. It doesn't bode well for your mate Davinson, though, Bardi.
It's okay. I'll sell him out for the sake of the club. Like I do with most of my friends, I'll sell them out for the greater good.
So on the topic of transfers, Matt T says, assuming money isn't an issue and all players would want to join, who's the one player each of you would sign this summer? So who's the dream signing for Spurs? Like, money's no object. All players are attracted to the Nuno project. Who are you signing? Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Is it your ice cream?
Yeah, there's an ice cream van outside.
I thought mine is gone. Who wants to go first on this? Nathan, do you want to go first?
This is always such a silly question. My answer is 34-year-old Leo Messi. It's really? That's never not the answer.
Really?
Yeah. Of course. Because he's the greatest player ever. He's still just about probably the best player in the world. Well, we could sign Mbappe and have more years out of him. We could sign Haaland and have more years out of him. But
yeah.
I don't know, and this is the thing, is that like the best possible signings that we can make are not what the squad needs unless we're selling Kane.
Yeah, that's where I was thinking you were going to go with this. Like, all right, the signing that the squad needs.
Sell Kane, buy Haaland.
Yeah,
sweet, and then we can continue.
Or buy Donnarumma. Let's get a goalkeeper in for the next 15 years.
No,
so that
you've
I can
got
think about it.
You've got a token to sign any one player. Donnarumma is as good a signing as you could possibly make in terms of goalkeeping, right? Because he's maybe the best goalkeeper in the world right now, and he's young. So I get what you're saying. Wrap that up for 15 years. That makes sense. But in doing that, you're turning down Erling Haaland or Kylian Mbappe or, God, who are the best centre-back prospects? The very best centre-back prospects. Well, maybe Jules Koundé, to be honest. I don't think you want to use that on a goalkeeper. But it's such a silly question because it becomes like completely immensely irrelevant. Unless I say, you know, Koundé. Who are the better centre? I feel like there's...
I remember this question coming up once, and I think it was with you two as well, and I said we should sign Ndidi, and then you guys all went De Bruyne or Kante.
I love Ndidi.
Yeah, but I was thinking logically about what we could do and who we needed, so I would sign, let's go for Locatelli then. Let's sign mine and Windy's boy.
So I knew you'd go for an Italian. This is why you wanted to shoehorn Donnarumma in there as well.
Best team in Europe, mate. You got to put them in.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of hard not to. When Nathan said the Messi thing, I was thinking, what? Like, you're not going to get many years out of him, but maybe you will, and maybe you don't need to because he'll probably win you the league in the 1 or 2 years he's with you.
Yep.
So it's sort of hard to look beyond that. But yeah, Haaland would be incredible, absolutely incredible. For like, if the part in Matt's question, which is, and they're happy, they want to join, if that lasts for a decade, like if you're signing Haaland for a decade, then absolutely get him in. That'd be incredible. Okay, last question. This one's been sitting here a while, so apologies to Alex Chincotta, who asked it quite a while back now. So he says, looking back in hindsight now, how much of where the club sits as a known top six club, especially back from years ago, during 2016-19, is down to Levy or is down to luck and Pochettino's magic? Levy's first choice for a manager back in 2014 was Van Gaal, but after he turned down the job, the club resorted to their third choice and hired Pochettino. What I'm specifically asking is whether Daniel Levy just got extremely lucky with a manager in Poch. He used his magic to transform the club and propel them massively while bringing in a load of revenue over the years. Because looking back now, I think the hiring of Poch just sped up the process of Daniel Levy's long-term vision. Poch has propelled this club to a huge platform, and since his departure, Daniel Levy has made a wrong decision every step of the way the past 2 years. Initially, I believed that Levy was a good decision maker, but since the sacking of Poch and what was entailed these last two seasons, I am weighing up whether Levy actually conducted a good job, and instead, I think he's gone very lucky. If you asked me 1.5 years ago if Levy could build upon the strong base Poch set, both as a squad of players and as a known elite club in England and Europe, I would have said 100% yes. But at the moment, I'm seriously doubting the ability of Daniel Levy and whether he can get this club back to where Poch took it to, and the thought of it frightens me.
I mean, there's a couple of things here which pop out to me, and it's Levy wanted Van Gaal to start with, and you know, in football, nothing, just like every transfer is not a guaranteed success, is not always a guaranteed success with a manager as well. Alex Ferguson, one of the greatest managers that ever existed, was nearly fired, and had Mark Robbins not scored a goal in an FA Cup tie to keep him in it, then he would have been fired way before he was able to create a legacy in Manchester United. And I do think Levy has got a few things wrong, but that's just part and parcel of becoming, of being a football manager. Van Gaal was the kind of obvious choice at the time. And even though Mourinho was a mistake, you could still kind of see what he was doing there. And there's no formula for success unless you go out and give £500 million to Pep Guardiola. There's nothing else really there that can work. So I think Tottenham have to try and find ways around that. And he's tried to do that. And he's made mistakes and he's got things wrong. But that's football, man. Things don't always work out. And that's just the way it goes. You did move the question, so I couldn't look at it anymore, Wendy. You sneaky person.
That wasn't deliberate. No, you're right that things don't always work out. And also, just because things didn't work out with a manager at another club doesn't mean it wouldn't have worked out with Spurs as well. So kind of the same thing works in reverse. So maybe Van Gaal would have been absolutely fine at Spurs and it would have been a success. I do think there's something in Alex's question, because I too have lost faith in Daniel Levy. And I think that's why I'm pleased that we've got Paratici now, because it kind of removes some of the decision making from Levy. It gives him a right hand man who knows football much better than Daniel Levy does, frankly. And it allows Levy to focus on the things that he's good at. And you know, he's shown that he's good at over a long, long time now at Spurs. So yes, I am. I think I agree. I think I agree with what Alex is getting at. I definitely think Pochettino took us at the start miles ahead of schedule. I don't think that necessarily continued. Like, I don't think he kept up with himself, if that makes sense. And I think he wasn't helped along the way with some poor decision-making by the club, one way or another. And perhaps he needed a director of football himself to sort of give him a nudge in the right direction at that point, which is probably why we tried to get Paratici back when Poch was still the manager. But yeah, broadly speaking, I think I agree. How about you, Nathan?
I strongly agree. My own understanding of football has dramatically improved during the time that Poch has been at the club. And so, like, there's been this period of time where Levy hasn't really made any single major decision. He's maintained sort of a benefit of the doubt in my mind.
He's made a bunch and none of them have been great.
Yeah. I mean, I sort of, like, the Mourinho one was like, ooh, he's made a mistake there. But, like, the search for manager this summer, the things he's been in favour of, according to reporting, and the things he's been against, really, really strongly made me feel that Alex is spot on, that we just lucked into Pochettino. I think that, like, business-wise, financial management-wise, Levy's been ahead of the game significantly. And I've argued this before, that, like, his business mind is really strong compared to competitors. But he just doesn't know much at all about football, and we were so lucky to stumble into Pochettino after failing again and again. I think that we could possibly have had similar success with Villas-Boas had things gone better with him. So like there's a vague idea or a sort of impression towards, oh, let's try younger foreign coaches who have a history of playing some kind of, you know, possession football or whatever. But there's so much just guessing into the dark with Levy. Good signings that we've made under him are to be attributed to people, other people he's lucked into hiring. Again, you know, the work that he's done in terms of financial management, the stadium, all that kind of stuff. We still have one of the best chairmen in the world in terms of that. But his contribution towards the football side of things has been, I think, has been pretty abysmal and a bit lucky here and there. So, yeah, much more of it is on Pochettino, on the luck of landing Pochettino than belongs to Levy. That's how I feel now after this summer. I gave Levy more of a share of that before, but I don't anymore.
What I'm hearing from you this episode, Nathan, is Alex C, good questions, Matt T, bad questions.
Yeah.
I'm going to fight for Matt T. I liked his question.
No, but he knows what he's doing. Like, Matt T's a smart guy. He knows that he's playing a trap with that card. He knows that he's setting us up. It's not that that question is not indicative of his understanding of football. He's playing a game, right? So he knows what he's doing.
He's teasing you.
He's teasing me.
The T is for tease. Boddy, how are you gonna celebrate the great unlocking?
The great unlocking?
I was gonna call it Freedom Day, but it's not Freedom Day, is it?
I'm just happy to be much better than I was last week. I'm happy that my personal unlocking, my 10 days of isolation, was over today and I was able to go out for a run. Well, I kind of call it a run, but I don't know what's happened to my body over coronavirus. So I celebrated by going out for a nice run this morning, Windy. Saw some fields, saw some other humans apart from my wife and my pain in the backside puppy dog. So it was nice to be out.
So you're still struggling with symptoms?
Yeah, I just don't have the power in my lungs anymore. I said in our Discord server that I feel like I've got the lungs of a person that's worked many, many decades down a mine, which is really sad. But I'm hoping this is just a temporary thing.
It's a nasty virus that attacks the airways and lungs, so yeah.
It's a proper bastard, that's what it is.
Yeah, it is. Nathan, I imagine you are in a similar position to me, which is my other half is extremely clinically vulnerable, and this is an absolute nightmare because what the government have done is essentially made no space safe. And I'm trying to sort of work out how we come to terms with trying to live a life and maintain safety. It's not great. How about you, Nath?
Yeah, no, I'm going to go join the violent protest down in London today, the anti-lockdown on the day that everyone is released from lockdown.
Absolute nutcases. What are they protesting at? Well, this is the thing. It's clearly not an anti-lockdown protest, is it? They are just angry people who are mad at the world and want to shout at someone and maybe fight someone as well. And there's a lot more to this, I think, than the lockdown and civil liberties. There's a lot more kind of underlying nastiness about it. And this is a way of them coming together and expressing their anger. And they've got... Oh my god, it's so ludicrous when you think about it. They've got people telling them that the vaccine is laced with 5G. It's absolute... It's lunacy. There are literally hundreds of people... I can't even. I can't go there.
I really set you up for that, didn't I?
Yeah.
They can go do whatever they want today. They can go sit next to each other in a cinema. They can go raving. They can go do... They can sit on the tube without a mask on. They can pretty much do whatever they want. But they're in the hot, in the heat, in central London, shouting at some coppers who just paid there to kind of listen to their bullshit. They could actually do anything they wanted today. It should be people, those people who are protesting the Freedom Day should actually be down there complaining.
They're not, they can do exactly what they want to do. You're right, Bardi. They can do whatever the hell they want to do today for the first time in months. And what they've chosen to do is to go into central London together and... a chant about vaccines being bioweapons and surveillance systems. It is absolutely insane. But, I mean, the thing is, these people have been radicalised online during this last 18 months, and in many ways we should be feeling sorry for them, not laughing at them, because, like, how do they come back from this in life? If you're that... I have friends now who've been radicalised in the same way, unfortunately, and, like, they're not friends anymore because they're insane. Like, how do you come back from that position? I don't know. I don't know how you... If anyone has any advice on how you try and encourage people away from insane conspiracy theories and get them back out the rabbit hole, please get in touch, because I have no idea where to start.
They're right to be angry. They just don't know what it is that they should be angry about.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davy Shambles and his SoundCloud @DLindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.